the team from China, they had what was basically like a golden ticket on their board because they had a player who was basically unrated, named Pang Bo.
Pang Bo,
And
the Chinese dragon.
yeah, he didn't have a rating, but he was probably around FIDE Master level. Well, I'm also curious, but I can tell you when the interview started. So it started 26 minutes ago. No, like 27 minutes ago.
That's probably historically the longest interview in Speechless Championship history.
Oh, like 100%.
Talking as a venture capitalist without the money. I don't have any money to throw any capital in anybody's direction. But yeah, I feel like somebody within the chess world or coming from outside the chess world should be investing and perhaps coming up with a better return. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the C Squared podcast. It's been a while. A lot of things have happened in the chess world. Fabi, you've played a couple of matches as well. We've had some world championships. I'm sure we will get into that in just a second. The Speed Chess Championship has been progressing, and finally, we've had a couple of important results that I'm sure we will discuss. And a couple of big tournaments are coming up as well, and we will touch on that also. But first and foremost, how's it going, man? How's life? How's everything? We haven't chatted on camera, at least, for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been a while. Actually, I can't remember exactly when we did the last one.
We
I
did
think
the
it was in
last la
Zagreb, right?
we did the last one after Zagreb, so we did it online after we each got back to our respective homes, I think.
Yeah, it's been a busy. Oh yeah, I remember. That was before I went to Jamaica.
Correct.
Talking about that. Yeah, so it's been a busy few weeks. Went to Jamaica, came back. This is in time for the tournaments in St. Louis that are starting in 5 days from the time that we're recording this. I guess they might be close to starting after this actually gets published. And a bunch of events have happened that one I wasn't a part of, the World Rapid and Blitz Team Championship. It's called a World Championship, but I don't really think it makes sense to call it that. So let's just call it.
It's a
I mean,
new world championship.
yeah, you can call it what you want. You can call it a world championship or not, but I mean, you could always attach words to things. It's a pretty informal event because you have the format is you have a bunch of teams. Anyone can create a team, and you have to have four players of any level. So you can stack the top four boards. You have to have a woman's board, and you have to have an amateur board, which means I think that the player can never have been over the rating 2000. So that board is also very interesting because, as we saw, the team from China, they had what was basically like a golden ticket on their board because they had a player who was basically unrated, named Pang Bo.
Pang Bo,
And
the Chinese dragon.
yeah, he didn't have a rating, but he was probably around FIDE Master level. I mean, this is an estimation. I don't know, of course, his level, if we can even, get an accurate reading on that, but he was very strong for the board and he mopped up. He got 11 out of 11.
Yeah, immediately
So
after
he.
about four rounds, my estimate was about 2100, 21, 2200.
Yeah, that could, like, it's. Let's say he's playing players of very varying strengths. Maybe some are like 1700, 1800 strength, some are maybe 1400 strength, right? Maybe someone are even lower than that. But whatever their strength, he was clearly better than everyone else on that board. So I was estimating like maybe 2200, maybe 2300, but I felt like he was a bit raw in terms of his like understanding some games from what I saw. But he's a very competent player, so he won every game. He just was like a dominant force on that board.
Just to put things in perspective, he came into the tournament with 1400. 1400 is the rating you get when you first start playing chess. This is a huge gap between 1400 and whatever our estimate is, 21, 2200. That's, 5, 6 years of continuous progress, more or less. So the guy definitely has some experience. He just simply never played a FIDE rated event, but I'm sure he played a lot of chess in China and probably has a pre significant education in terms of chess. He probably studied it at a young age, played, competed against other Chinese players, but simply never had the opportunity to showcase that at an international level. So yeah, obviously, everybody kind of understood that that China, the Chinese team, will have a pretty significant edge on that final board.
Yeah, and the winners in the end were this team, I believe, from Dubai.
Alain, yes, in the rapid motion.
From the Emirates, I don't know if Dubai or some other city, but I think it was an Emirati team. And yeah, they won the rapid, and the blitz was won by the WR chess team, which is a chess team sponsored by Vadim Rosenstein. That's why WR. And they were the favorites. That was a team with Magnus and with Nepomniachtchi and with Pragnanta and actually Duda and so on and so forth. Like really, really strong team. Keimer, a lot of top players.
Absolutely, yeah, stacked team.
Really, really strong team. They had like the best top four boards. They had the top woman in the world, although this is debatable because Ho Yifan is inactive these days. Like she's a truly great player, but she isn't a very active player. And she was clearly number one woman in the world for a long period. But these days, I think it's debatable. If you're inactive for so long, then definitely I wouldn't say she's like clearly stronger than Wen Jun, for example. They also had another world champion. So Wen Jun, Ho Yifan was world champion, and Kostyanyuk was also on the team, also former world champion. But they were, that board was not clear to me, like if they were the strongest, because Wen Jun was on the Chinese team, and Wen Jun is really strong too.
Yes.
And their amateur board, Vadim was playing on the amateur board, he was struggling. So in the rapid, they didn't manage to, I think they got bronze. They didn't manage to win. They were the favorites, but they didn't manage to win. And I actually thought China could at some point be the favorite. That was my feeling. But in the end, it was the Al Ain team. I just want to make sure I'm actually getting the country right, the team.
No, Al Ain for sure won. I think it's a
UAE. I know that, but I want to make sure that, yeah, they are an Emirati team.
UAE team, yes.
Yeah.
With a lot of Russian players, actually.
Yeah, that was Dubov, Artemiev, Lakhno, Parham was playing on the team. Artemiev, Maksulu, Duda, yeah, Mirzin. But yeah, really, Andreykin. So it's a very strong team. And Lakhno was their women's board, and Mirzin was like their young guy.
Yes.
Yeah, so very strong team. Like a bit of a surprise that they won, but definitely a possibility that they could win. So anyway, it was an interesting event. I followed, although I think the broadcast was not great. I mean, it was hard to follow. Sometimes the DGT was just failing, and then you can't follow the games because they're trying to do it by camera, but you have this weird camera angle. You can't really like make out the action without a relay board. So yeah, the broadcast definitely left something to be desired, but it was a fun event, and the Blitz was won by WR. And Magnus in the Blitz was very, very strong. And a fun event to watch.
Yeah, speaking of the broadcast, I feel this is one of the things that really need to be addressed, especially with the upcoming Rapid and Blitz World Championship in New York. I mean, obviously, FIDE was the organizer for this one, will be the organizer for that one. They probably know what they need to work on. But I feel this has been a big problem in the world of chess, and especially in Rapid and Blitz events for a while now. Like, you very often get this very patchy delay and relay of the boards as well, especially in Blitz. Like, you get sometimes 20 seconds without any moves being displayed, and then suddenly it jumps to a completely different situation on the board, position on the board. So it's just, you know, as a spectator, you cannot follow that. And the commentators, you know, sure, they could maybe do a better job, but how do you do a better job when you don't even see the moves that are happening on the board? So I feel, you know, we're an entrepreneurial podcast as well. We're a business entrepreneurship. Are we discussing politics? We're discussing definitely animals and all sorts of things on the C-Squared podcast. Look,
But
I
what does
think.
politics have to do with the relay, with the
No, I'm just saying that we're a podcast that discusses all sorts of topics.
I mean, sure. I still don't see the connection. But yeah, I agree that FIDE could do a better job with their broadcast. Like, the thing is, when you compare the FIDE to like the St. Louis Chess Club broadcast, the St. Louis broadcasts go very smoothly and they don't have any board glitches. But they do deal with, let's say, six boards or something like that, five boards, usually somewhere around that, while the FIDE events deal with, 40 boards, 80 boards, whatever it is.
It's probably going to be more during the World Rapid and Blitz
Yeah,
tournaments.
during the World Championship, you might have like 160 players, or you got 80 boards there. And of course, a lot of them, you're not following at all, you're following the top boards, but still, you could have glitches. That can happen. But still, you have a lot of money going into these events and a big prize pool and a lot of top players. You definitely want to get the broadcast running smoothly, because you're going to have an event like that. You're going to have thousands of people tuning in, and you can get tens of thousands for sure tuning in on your main broadcast channel, whatever it is. Because, like, let's say the World Championship, you'll have 100+ thousand people tuning in for sure. The World Rapid and Blitz Championship, definitely you'll get tens of thousands who are going to see, Magnus and all the other top players who are playing. And why not ensure? I mean, of course, I'm sure they do try to ensure that they have a smooth broadcast, but yeah, it does tend to be sometimes a bit patchy, as you mentioned. And anyway, we'll see how that goes for the World Rapid and Blitz Championship. Like, from my point of view, of course, I don't care too much when I'm playing. Like, if the broadcast has some issue, okay, it's not my under my control, and also it doesn't really affect me when I play. But as a spectator, and I was a spectator for the team event, right? I wasn't playing there. You can notice it. It was like I didn't watch it with great enthusiasm, only because of that. Because at some point, I was like, also they took this. I think it has to be avoided. You have like 2 hours of playing, and then you have a 1 hour break. I know that they have like a lot of organizational stuff and a lot of boards and resetting the boards, the clocks, and so on, doing the pairings. But a 1 hour break, I'm not sitting through that. I'm just not going to watch it. Like, I can watch 2 hours, but then a 1 hour break, I'm not like tuning in after that, right? I'm
Yeah,
going
that's a
to lose
huge
interest.
problem as well. And it's not an easy one to fix. I have a feeling that one is much more difficult to fix than, the patchy relay of the moves. Just because, especially when you have so many teams, so many players, there will be problems with not having too many arbiters, not getting the results in time, making sure that the pairings are correct. So this whole system is a very clogged system, and that's going to take 10 15 minutes to get the pairings up. Then you have to wait for the players, you have to give the players some time to get back to their boards, things of that nature. And the more players you have, the worse it gets. So this one I feel is a much more difficult problem to address than the relay.
Yeah, that's an issue, of course, with a big event. But somehow you have to manage it, because, of course, it's fine to have an event which is just for the chess players. But if you're going to like try to make it a spectator event, spectator friendly event, big breaks are just not going to cut it. We see with the chess.com events, they have very, very small breaks, which is tough for the players, I have to admit. Like, I just played the Speed Chess Championship, two matches there, and we have 6 minutes. 6 minutes, we have 2 6-minute breaks and 2 10-minute breaks in the
Yeah,
entire event.
but I don't think they're comparable. I just don't think they're comparable. Like
Of course, because you don't have pairings there. Yeah, I understand. It's different. You don't have to like reset boards. It's all online. It's all automatic. But still, okay, it's a difficult thing.
and then you get
I think.
the situations like we had at the World Rapid and Blitz where there was a complaint. I think it was Andrew Hong when he played against Yu Yanggi, if I'm not mistaken, or Wei, one of the Chinese players. And
It was Yu Yangi,
Yu
yeah. Yu
Yanggi,
Yangi.
yeah. And that took, if I remember correctly, something like an hour to be solved. even Jan complained about it, you know, made a fuss about it. But
well,
yeah, that was a big
I was
problem
there.
as well.
It was actually a mess. I think we spoke about it back in December. But yeah, it wasn't the fault of the players. Basically, there was a clock dispute. Like Andrew Pong flagged, but he said that he pressed the clock and it didn't register. And then he issued an appeal because he flagged, so he lost. He issued an appeal. The appeal was denied, and the time that it took to deny the appeal was like an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
Exactly.
One of the issues was, of course, that they also had to like translate at some point. Although Andrew Hong and Yuan Yi both speak Mandarin, as far as I know, they were communicating fine. But then there was like communication issues with the organizers and Yuan Yi, and it just took a long time. The problem there, of course, was that they could not postpone the decision because it affects the pairings for the next round. So you basically have to deal with it at the moment. But yeah, it was a nightmare for the other players playing because you have like a 1.5 hour break. You're just sitting around there and you have nothing to do. And it's already like a 6 hour day of chess, so it's pretty tiring. But okay, I think that's up to the organizers to basically resolve it very quickly, like within 20 minutes. They basically just have to make a decision very quickly. They check the video replay, they make a quick decision, whatever it is, and then we go on to the next round. Like they took a bit too long with that stuff. Anyway, that's far in the past, right? We
No,
and
just to give you kind of examples of, you know, problems that can arise with this type of events and the problem of breaks, which I understand it's very annoying, especially from a broadcast perspective. Just for the spectators, you're never going to watch that. You know, just compare it to, I guess, the Olympics. Right now, when one sport finishes, you don't wait for the next person from that particular sport to begin his competition. You just go to a different sport. So it's very easy, right? But in chess, we don't have that luxury, let's say. So yeah, it's a tricky one, especially when you have more players involved in the competition. Cool.
you know what I'm watching right now? Like, I'm not really watching. I mean, I have the video on.
Which one?
I'm watching an interview, and I don't know what's being said because I don't have the sound on, obviously. But it's an interview between Hans and Daniel Naroditsky.
Okay.
It's after the Hans versus Wesley match,
Okay.
and they've been talking for like the last 30 minutes. I don't know. They've been talking for a long time, and I don't know what they're saying, but clearly a lot of things are being said. I mean, we'll have to like. Watch this after.
I'm letting the chess speak for itself, and I think that throughout my entire chess career, it'll become abundantly clear that I deserve an apology. But I'm not a victim, so I don't need an apology. My vengeance will be victory on the chessboard.
But it's getting very intense, without actually knowing what is being said.
I have no idea
So
what they're saying. So this is my guess. I would assume Hans is perhaps not very happy with Magnus not playing him in the World Rapid and Blitz or the Team Rapid and Blitz.
do you think it's
If
about
we are to
Magnus?
speculate, that's my guess. I think
Here's
he's
the thing,
just
because
like,
like,
yes, go ahead.
yeah, it could be about Magnus. That's true. But the thing is, like, Magnus is not part. I mean, I understand that that's an issue between Hans and Magnus, right?
Yes.
But there's not really much that Danya can like say about that. He's an
Correct.
interviewer,
Yes.
and this has nothing to do with the match with Wesley
Of course not.
that they just played. Hans won, by the way. He beat Wesley. He beat Maxime before that. And it is kind of relevant in the sense that there is a high probability that Hans and Magnus get paired next match. That's sort of relevant if that's what he's talking about. But yeah, it does look like there is definitely some discussion, some drama, you could call it.
First of all,
And
Magnus hasn't won his game against Erugayashi
oh,
yet.
yeah, sure.
He's a
There's a
big
probability.
favorite to win that match, and if he wins that, he's going to qualify to the semifinals in Paris, where he will be meeting Hans, and that would be the first time they meet over the board since, obviously, the incident at the Singapore Cup 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, this has been, let's say, the discussion after Hans tweeted about it, that, you know, people were speculating whether Magnus was afraid of Hans, whether he was just like, you know, not liking him and didn't want to play against him. Nobody knows exactly what the situation is between them. Only the players, Hans and Magnus, do know that. But
Well, they also
Magnus,
might not
they will be
know.
forced to play
I mean, they don't know like the other person's position Like Magnus knows why he's not playing.
Right.
Hans doesn't. Magnus did. Well, we should say not. It's not that they're not playing. It's that they didn't play in the World Team Rapid and Blitz Championship. They were paired twice, their teams,
Yes.
and Magnus and Hans were both the first boards, but Magnus chose to
Sit out.
sit out for those two rounds, and instead, or maybe it was more than 2 rounds, maybe it was 3 rounds, and instead Hans played Jan multiple games. I think they drew in Rapid,
Three rounds,
and I think
one
Hans
rapid
won
and two blitz.
and lost two in Blitz. I don't know. On like the, I was a bit confused about the format, but I think that it was like 2-1 for Jan in Blitz. Maybe I'm mistaken. But anyway, so Magnus chose not to play Hans. His reasons, I mean, we can actually like speculate on it fairly, but there's no real point. I mean, it's clear that he didn't want to play for whatever reason. And in a team event, that is, of course, his prerogative, depending on if his team is okay with it. And in an individual event, of course, it's a very different thing because if you sit out in an individual event, like he did in Singfield Cup, for example, we're going already back 2 years, but very significant event in recent chess, then you forfeit the game. Very often, you forfeit the tournament. You mess up the tournament standings. You give a free win to your opponent. It's a different situation. So in a team event, it's like very, it's not very dramatic. You just get replaced by your second board, right? And nothing else changes. But in an individual event, it's a like I would think if Magnus beats Arjun, then he is certainly going to play the semi-final match against Hans.
Correct.
But yeah, okay. Anyway, I don't know what they're talking about. It's just this is still going on. It's a long interview.
I'm sure we will be able to crop a couple of highlights in the post-production. Maybe we'll add a few. But yeah, should be an interesting time in Paris. That actually happens in September, just before the Olympiad starts.
September 6th, I believe.
Yes,
It's
sixth.
also interesting to me that like with all the stuff going on in chess, there is one guy who's at the controversial center of it all for one reason or another. And somehow Danya is like placed, he's not a part of it, but he's placed in like you remember the stuff the where Danya was playing Jacobson, right? So he's like not part of it, but then he gets placed in these positions
Yes.
as an interviewer, as a player. It's funny.
But
It was Danya who played Jacobson in
who
that.
played Jacobson, Visu, the infamous Visu that got banned on chess.com and never reinstated, and we had the whole Reddit situation. But I don't think Danya commented publicly about that. I don't think
He did.
he gave a
But
he didn't have like a huge opinion on it. He was just
no,
like, okay.
he didn't give like a controversial opinion, but
Yeah.
he did speak about it. I'm not, I don't remember what he said, but he did like speak on his channel, Twitch channel, about it and gave his thoughts, which I won't say because I'm not sure that I'll remember or get it right. But yeah, in general, Danya
I think the
is a
main
very
point was basically that he didn't accuse Visu or his opponent of cheating. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they spoke. He said they spoke about it like between themselves, and well, that's the thing. Like when a chess website takes the onus, like we have a lot of people who make their own insinuations, publicly or privately, right? And then that's not a very official thing, right? So very often they get flack for that. But when the like chess website takes the onus on them, then usually the chess player steps out because then it's like more their territory, right? Of the chess website. But Danny is like not a he's a very fair and unbiased person in general. So he it's just funny that he's like being placed into these controversial situations.
And
Yeah,
look, that could be something that they're chatting about. Who knows? Because we know that Hans is somewhat of a friend, I guess, with Brandon Jacobson. They played on the same team at this World Rapid and Blitz. So yeah, definitely some connections there. Who knows? Who knows? I actually have now you're making me curious because I have no
Oh,
idea what you're talking
they're still
about.
talking. It's been, I can tell you how long it's been.
It's been a while.
So,
You're making me curious right now.
well, I'm also curious, but I can tell you when the interview started. So it started 26 minutes ago. No, like 27 minutes ago.
That's probably historically the longest interview in Speechless Championship history.
Oh, like 100%. It's 100% the longest interview. Like usually when I played Serrana afterwards, I won against Serrana. I gave like a 5 minute thing with Danny. And then I also gave an interview after I lost to Alireza in the quarterfinal match, right? And then I gave like another 5 minute interview. Like 5 minutes is the, because nobody really would want to tune in for 25 minutes unless I guess it gets very controversial and there's like 10,000 people watching, so I'm pretty sure people are tuning in, which probably means it's very controversial.
That's why I speculated. It's about Magnus and whatever is going to happen in that one. But yes, if Magnus defeats Eric Gaethje in the quarterfinals, then they're going to meet for the very first time, which will definitely be quite a spectacle for sure. Whatever happens in that one, everybody will be tuning in. They're going to be meeting in the semis in Paris. By the way, another big match is going to happen. I think maybe tomorrow. That's going to be Jan versus Hikaru.
I think we can, like, what are your thoughts on the final two quarterfinal matches? Who
I
has
mean,
the
Hikaru has to be a favorite in that one. But Jan is also a tremendous blitz player. At the same time,
What are the odds you say? What's the split between in the
65
two matches?
35
65 35
for
for
Hikaru. And then in the Magnus one, I would say I want to go around 75 to 80 for Magnus.
Okay, I
75,
mean,
80% for
fair
Magnus.
numbers. I don't know about Hikaru. Like I've seen the results of past matches. I mean, Jan is very capable, but he in this format he doesn't have the consistency of Hikaru.
That's the thing, consistency, yes.
So, like, I think the numbers would lead us to say that Hikaru is a pretty decent favorite. What his like has he? Well, he's always gotten to the final. Hikaru, he's always gotten to the final, so he's never lost a quarterfinal match. And Jan has had some close matches. He's beaten some good players, but definitely consistency is on Hikaru's side. So maybe 65-35 is fair. It could be a bit higher if we look at like the, I don't know, like what the statistics would tell us. And Magnus Arjun, I'm gonna go a bit higher. You know, like I've played both of them in this format.
Miss something in
Arjun,
higher, just
I. Yeah, I think so. Arjun is a really great player. I mean, absolutely no doubt. He's one of the best in the world at all time controls. And if we look at his blitz rating, I'm pretty sure it's very high. I'll just tell you what it is. It's 12th in the world at 27.39.7, which is, and he actually beat Magnus in one of the games they played recently over the board. And he lost a 1-1 split between them. But I played him and I won a very close match in 2022. And Magnus, I feel especially in this format, like a long match where even if things are going wrong at some stage, he still always has chances to overcome it and get back. I really think it's like 85 to 90. I mean, I could be off. I don't want to like sell Arjun short, but I think Magnus, it's just such a long match. And I don't feel like Arjun is at the tier of Hikaru Magnus. Hikaru is a tier lower than Magnus in this format, but he's pretty good. He's really close. But I think that Magnus is really,
He's a big favorite.
I think so. But I could be proven wrong. Like I would have said Wesley is a huge favorite against Hans. I mean, I really would have. I would have said like 70-30, and he did win. So it of course. I mean, 70-30 is still 30, 30% is still happening a significant amount of the time, right? And even 10% is happening a decent amount of the time. I mean, it happens, right? You have a bad day, like Maxime beat Magnus, Hikaru beat Magnus. And then you see Maxime who beat Magnus losing to Hans. And you would think, okay, the guy who beat Magnus should be a serious favorite against Hans, right? But these things are unpredictable.
By the way, this interview is still happening.
Yeah, it's over now. I
okay,
think it just
give me 1 second. I'm
Of course,
going to actually play it.
congratulations on your win against Wesley.
It's a
What did
half
you
hour
do?
interview.
Okay, they just finished. I tuned in. at the last second of the interview. Yeah.
Shout out to David Howell for sitting patiently for a 30-minute interview without, he wasn't the one interviewing, so they only have one person talking. So he was just waiting for it to end.
Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Cool. Your experience in the Speed Chess Championship, obviously things didn't go your way in the last match against Ali Reza. Your experience?
Yeah, first I played Alexei Serrano. He's a 27, 17 classical player. He's also very good at Blitz. He's well known for being good at Blitz. I think he's even medaled in Blitz.
Like, oh, he has. Yeah. He has. At the European Center.
And it was a back and forth match, but in the bullet, I outperformed him by a lot. And in the bullet, I took it away. I think it was +1 for me before bullet, and then I scored +6 in bullet. So that was a good match for me. I really wasn't sure that I would be like a big favorite, but yeah, it went well overall. And then I played Ali Reza, and I was feeling like relatively decent, but things, yeah, I wasn't at my best that day, I think. Also, he, at the start, I think he was a bit shaky, but then he found his form pretty quickly. And I think like around the middle of the match, he was playing at a very good level.
He was.
He played good games.
He was.
At the start, I wasted a few points that I really could have gotten, like, just second game. Okay, he could also complain, like, first game he was winning. But second game, I really should have won. It was just, like, an, you know, balls in the net, basically. And, yeah, then it was, like, equal at some point, but I was never ahead in the match. So I was equal, and then he, around that time, after I won two games, then he really started to play well. That was the point.
Yeah,
and yeah, I went into bullet with a significant deficit, so bullet was -1 for me, but it didn't matter. Yeah, I didn't really have chances going into the bullet because, I mean, maybe if it was like, you know, 3 points, I wouldn't be thrilled, but I would still think some chances remain. But 5 points going into bullet, yeah, it's, I tilted in the last two blitz games of 3-1, definitely, and he was playing well. Of course, the time scrambles were a mess for both of us. We both made serious mistakes, but that's the nature. Like, we were playing really, really combative chess, both of us. And then you tend to have huge blunders in time scrambles. So that's what happened for both of us. But he was blundering a little bit less frequently, so he was taking most of the time scrambles. There were some, a bit back and forth, but it was tough to win games. Like, the games where I won had to be really clean, because I don't think I won like the, I only won one really messy game before we got to bullet. And that was the like Archangel game. And the other games that I won, I think had to be just like clean affairs, because in time trouble, it was tough to take him down. He was very tricky.
Do you feel that's inevitable, more or less, the time trouble situations in this type of matches? Like, forget about your match, but in general, we've seen this kind of trend play out, right? With crazy scrambles, and then whoever holds his or her nerves better, or whoever has, you know, the better shape that particular day, in those time scrambles, is just a matter of one slight mistake, like the one that you just mentioned, game two. I think is the one where you allowed bishop to c6, right? And the queen trap, basically. You
play that was game c6. That was game two. Yeah, I think that the time scrambles are inevitable, especially when you're playing like players who, let's say, in the starting phase of the game, they're pretty evenly matched, and it's not like there's no like crushing defeats mostly. So you have these like really evenly matched games, and even if someone is at some point starting to really take away the game, it's going to lead to like you're winning, but you have 10 seconds, which people underestimate like how little time you have there, because it's a 1 second increment. You don't have time to pause.
Yes.
You can't about the position. You actually have to move or you flag.
Exactly.
So you can't even like really scan the board. It's just pure instinct at some point, or you can try to accumulate time with like quick moves at some moment, but 1 second, you basically don't accumulate much time. Like once people get down to 10 seconds, that's it. They're down to that. And when you get down to 2 seconds, a lot of people flag or they try to make random moves not to flag. So the blunders are inevitable. It's not like I see this stuff sometimes, you know, people are shocked at blunders. I'm like, you can't look at the board in 1 second. sometimes you have time to think on your opponent's move. Then you can, like, in your mind, pre-move, right? Like, okay, my opponent. Sometimes you have situations where you have like 5 seconds, your opponent has a minute. Then you can actually think on their time about what they're going to do and maybe predict something. But for the most part, you're basically just running on pure instinct and maybe like quick cursory scan of tactics in 1 second. Of course, there is like different skill levels in this. It's not like it's just random, but nobody is playing good chess when they're down to 2 seconds.
Yeah, and then you take the tilt element of it, and we've seen what can happen. We've seen recently, exactly, like as recent as 30 minutes ago, what could happen.
Alireza is one of the best when it comes down to the last few seconds. He's
Yes, he's good.
definitely one of the best,
He's good.
along with Magnus Hikaru for sure. And I think besides the three of them, I'm not sure there are people who are really consistent down to seconds. I mean, I played in Bullet again in all these matches, and Hikaru and Magnus clearly are the best from what I've seen. Alireza, he's good, of course, but in Bullet, I'm talking Bullet 1 second increment. I really
Yes.
think Magnus and Hikaru, and I feel like Duda has also, he has the potential to play really, really strong in that. But other people I noticed, it's like very, very much balanced. Like I played Arjun in Bullet, played Noderbeck in Bullet. It was usually, and I'm not like known for Bullet, but I usually came out ahead in these Bullet segments. Maxime as well. So, but with Magnus and Hikaru, definitely in Bullet 1+1, especially I've noticed that Hikaru basically just like ends up with a minute plus after like 20 moves. He just like plays instantly. And then you're like, you're there with 40 seconds, and you're like, how do I have half the time of my opponent? So, yeah, anyway, I think this is why like Hikaru is so successful, because even if the blitz goes wrong for him, he always has the bullet backup. And he knows that, which gives him confidence for the blitz.
Yeah, no,
Like he doesn't get
definitely.
tilted because he knows, okay, I still have bullet. It's in the worst case, if things are going really wrong, there's always a chance in the bullet.
Yeah, no. Again, it was a cool match to follow. Obviously, the result didn't go your way, but these type of matches, I have to say, they're very enjoyable. And I've done commentary for it for our channel. I'm sure you know about that. I'm sure people that are probably watching this episode know about that. We've done our first stream on Twitch. I don't know if you were aware of that, but we've completed our first stream on Twitch. So that's pretty cool. Are you excited about that?
Yeah,
Are
I mean,
you ever
they're
going to stream Title Tuesday on this channel?
sure. Yeah, why not?
There you go. There you go. Go follow on Twitch, guys, if you are here for the first time. And if you want to see more streams from us, go follow us on Twitch as well. We'll do something in the description below, or maybe it's gonna pop something up on the screen. Anyway, exciting Speed Chess Championship coming up in Paris. I'm looking forward to that. Now, what else has happened in the? Oh yeah, there's that big match. Big match. Bigger than yours, at least according to Anish. you saw the tweet, right?
I know what you mean. It's not, but it's not over. So it's
It's
like,
not
okay,
over. First
Anish
day,
and Hans.
first day is over. Anish and Hans. Anish lost 7.5, 3.5, or better said,
7.5,
Hans
4.5.
7.5, 4.5. Hans won day one in the blitz portion. He seems to be having a great run in blitz. What did you
I don't understand.
think? What did you think of the
What's
first
the
day?
schedule like? I don't understand. They played one classical game followed by 10 blitz games.
No.
What did they do?
No, they played 12
They played
blitz
a classical game.
games. No, they didn't play classical today.
What do you mean? There is a classical round, August. I'm looking at it.
Are you
Classical
sure?
round classical 5 on chess.com, August 7th, 2024. That's today. But I don't know why.
Maybe I'm dreaming. I thought they played 12 games of blitz, and then tomorrow they're going to play a classical. I think for the next 3 days they're playing classical, and then they finish with, I believe, six games of rapid or something like that.
Let me just look at Anisha's stream to because that will give Dan. I'll just like watch the live stream. Yeah, they started
Anish.
with Blitz. There was no classical, but I don't know why they have it's probably just a relay error on chess.com.
Must
They
be an
have like,
error, yes.
but the first game is a Blitz game, And also, how can you play one classical and 12 blitz games? It's like impossible. I don't know.
No. I can tell you for sure. It's 12 blitz games that just happened today, 7.5, 4.5. And then tomorrow they play one classical game. For the next 3 days, they play one classical per day. And then they finish it off in the last day with, I believe, six.
So they're done with blitz, yeah? They're done with their blitz?
Done with blitz.
Okay, but I'm not crazy. It actually does say classical.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, they had a lot of relay problems on chess.com.
Anyway, so they're playing their... They played their blitz. It's a three-point lead. Then they will play their classical and rapid, where... I don't know. I think, like... Of course, Anish is a favorite in classical, but how much? Not so clear. And rapid, also not so clear to me. How much of a favorite? I mean, you know, Hans in rapid, he hasn't had the greatest results, but Anish recently hasn't like played super, super great. If you look at Zagreb, the Zagreb rapid and blitz, I would not say that he was playing fantastic chess by any means. I don't think he would say that either. So, I don't know. It's maybe Hans is a favorite in the match currently just because he's leading the match by 3 points. But I guess it's weighted. So, like, the classical will count. So, for more, so if Anish wins a single classical game, it's completely in his hands again.
Is it? Is it weighted?
I think, I mean, it must be. Otherwise, it's just stupid. Maybe. Like, you shouldn't. Like, why have classical if you're going to weight them the same as blitz? Now, I would guess that classical is weighted significantly more.
Interesting. Well, if you look at the Speed Chess Championship, for example, it's not weighted.
Yeah, but that's because it's 5-1, 3-1, 1-1. Like, it's just... And it is weighted in the sense that you have less...
more time. Yes, yes. That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, you have more time to play 5.
So it doesn't... Like, otherwise it would just be bullet dominant. If it was like 75 minutes of bullet, 75 minutes of blitz, it would just be super bullet dominant. But also, 5-1 and 3-1, they're both blitz. Like, that makes sense. I mean, to weight classical, which is like a two-hour game for each side, with a five-minute game for each, or maybe they're playing three minutes for each side, is just silly. I mean, it's just too different. Like, you play most of your time, you're sitting at the board for classical, and you play five classical games. It takes you like 20 hours of playing. And then it's weighted the same as five blitz games that take 30 minutes of playing, you know? So that would just be silly.
Yeah. Cool.
Right? You might as well just agree.
Again, very interesting match. And I think we will discuss it more at length probably in the next episode when everything is said and done. Upcoming Rapid and Blitz. Big event. Obviously, you're leading right now. The Grand Chess Tour, you've won back-to-back events, doing quite well in terms of Grand Chess Tour points. And the next two events will certify, let's say, the top three positions, which are the most important for the Grand Chess Tour standings.
Yeah, that starts on the 12th, Rapid Blitz.
Hikaru is the wild card. Mm-hmm. In this one, I believe Lanier will also be a wild card in this one.
And Levanier.
So these are the three wild cards. And outside of that is you, Hikaru, Jan, Nodirbek, Alireza, Wesley, Prague, Lanier, Levan, and MVL. So very strong event.
Yeah, there's nobody weak. There's nobody who's even like weak by the standards of the event. Everyone's good. Everyone can win. But yeah, hopefully I'll do well. It's important because the final two events, they decide the Grand Chess Tour, and I'm leading at the moment. But yeah, it's, you know, every event will count heavily.
How are you feeling about your shape? What have you been doing in terms of preparation in the last in the last week or so?
Yeah, I mean, it's still been a bit busy because I came back from Jamaica, and Jamaica was a busy affair. We spent a day in Kingston. And actually 2 days, but one was like a half day. And that was just like meeting everyone and doing like, it was nonstop. And also, you remember this like Delta Airlines fiasco.
A mess. I do remember.
And I got canceled. And so I had to like, just find a way to like, to find some flights that got there. So I eventually arrive like 6 in the morning or 7 in the morning, whatever it was. And then I have events starting from 10 in the morning. And then they end at like 8 p.m. So, you travel, you sleep like 2 hours, and then you do, 10 hours of events. It's a rough one. And then the next day I did like a simul with the kids, with the Jamaican national team, open and women's teams. So they have some decent players. They have some like 2200s on the teams, some decent players, and they have some kids who are pretty good. There was one like 8-year-old girl, I'd say. I mean, I don't know exactly her age, but around that, who was pretty impressive. I played in the simul, pretty impressive play from her. And there was one boy who I was like, this kid is really good. And then he made some mistakes at the end of the simul game, but for most of it, he was playing really well. But I think I made, it was like 37 boards and I made 3 draws in the end. One of them, I was like, okay, I can, he offered a draw. I was like, okay, I can play this on, but this simul's been going on for 3 hours. So, okay, we'll just, it was an equal position, but I was like, yeah, I'll probably win this eventually, but yeah, let's take a draw. And yeah, so that's Maurice's program. It's a
How's the
nice
vibe?
thing.
How's the atmosphere?
In Jamaica?
Yeah, with the chess, let's say
Oh,
the
it's
chess scene
very
in Jamaica.
enthusiastic. They have like they have some infrastructure there. They have some money from the government. They have some influential people, like the Minister of Finance was there. And he's a pretty prominent politician, even like there were some connections with American politicians. And so he's a pretty prominent politician in Jamaica and also internationally. And so they secured government funding for their program. The chess players are very enthusiastic. I mean, I really think I must have taken like 200 photos in 1 day. It was just like a ton of kids and their parents and the coaches and so on and so forth. It was an interesting, it was a cool vibe. It's my first time being in Jamaica. Was my first time.
I bet Maurice was pretty proud of bringing you there, organizing this and
Yeah, well, they've done
having this
events in
one
the past
event.
too, but it was a good event. They've done events like I was surprised to hear that a Wonder Liang was in Jamaica a few years ago. They were playing a tournament of some sort, so they have some events now and then. They have some like infrastructure and support, but when you have like not much, like a small population, and you don't have like a culture of chess, like let's say history of chess, then it can be a struggle to get things off the ground, that's like when you have this kind of culture of chess, like the historical stuff, then it's much easier. Like you see Cuba with Capablanca, and even if you have or Netherlands with so many strong players that come from there, like you have these countries that have this history of chess, then it becomes more ingrained in the culture, in the general culture, and then you have like kids who are learning. And now when you don't have that, then you really have to push it. You have to teach it in schools, and it takes a lot more effort. So that's what Jamaica is trying to do now, which hopefully it works out. I think they have good chances of creating some strong players in the future.
Cool. Well, yeah, I think we more or less covered a lot of ground right now. I do have to bounce. I have a jiu-jitsu class in about 10 minutes from now, so I need to run. But just to close the loop, we were saying at the beginning that the podcast is tackling all sorts of problems and all sorts of topics, and you were asking what entrepreneurship and politics, and of course, entrepreneurship. What I wanted to say was that I feel there's a vacuum to be filled for a new Digi-T company. We only have the
I
Digi-T,
agree.
I feel there's a vacuum to be filled where you will have a board that relays the moves better. And that's why I invite, people in the comments. I'm talking as a venture capitalist without the money. I don't have any money to throw any capital in anybody's direction. But yeah, I feel like somebody within the chess world or coming from outside the chess world should be investing and perhaps coming up with a better
Well, there is
alternative.
this company, I mean, I think it's called Chess-Up. Like they do these
Oh,
interactive.
yeah, I know that one. I know that one. Chess Up.
And
they're
but
not
it's
paying
different.
us right now, so
I don't know. I'm just mentioning it. Like it's on. I'm not part of the project at all. I've never been asked to be part of the project, although I do know people who are part of the project or who have been. But they have these like interactive boards. But yeah, DGT itself is more of a, like that's a sort of kind of entertainment product, I guess. It's like you're. It can also be learning, but it's, you know, more of a specialty thing. While DGT is a company that gives a very practical product, which is you want to broadcast, you know, you want to broadcast a game, then you have this, which hooks it up directly to a computer, and then you get the moves relayed to the computer. So it's very useful, but yeah, they don't have much competition.
They basically monopolized.
There are some companies like
relay,
that, yeah.
Let's say market or yeah. whatever you want to call it.
Like, you know, Chessbase has completely monopolized, if you want to use that word, I don't know if it's a correct word. I don't want to get in trouble for using that word, but I mean, technically, I don't think they have created a monopoly, but everyone uses Chessbase for their home analysis. But there are other players in that. I think there is like, okay, I am sort of... I do work with this company, so I'll mention them, but they're not paying me for this specifically. But Chessify is one of the players who they have cloud engines, so they rent those out. But they also on their website, if you want to save analysis, if you want to look up games in their databases, they have almost all the same functions that Chessbase has. So it's very much. A race in that sense, like Chessify is starting to go after that market as well. So I wouldn't say it's a monopoly that Chessbase has, but for the last like, you know, 30 years or more than that, I guess, everyone has used Chessbase specifically, right? To you do it, I do it, everyone that I know
everybody
does it.
Does. Everybody uses Chessbase and every professional, I guess, right now uses Chessbase.
Yeah, but now, okay, I hope that Chessify, because they, I mean, I've used their cloud engines, but from like briefly using their like mobile or their web functions, like you can save analysis, you can look up games in a database, which is no less shabby than any online database you'll find anywhere else. And they have all the functionality that Chessbase has. So that's pretty cool.
One more thing before we close the show, because I just read it on Twitter right now, and we were speculating as to what Hans was talking about with Dania for a very long time. He also mentioned something that might be news to a lot of people, the fact that he had proctors with him.
Oh, I knew this, yeah.
In the room, yes. You knew, you know, some people didn't know, but it wasn't public knowledge. It does seem like that's one of the things that for this year's Speed Chess Championship, chess.com has been implementing, which is live
for
proctors.
Specific people.
For specific people, yes, yes. And I think that's a good thing. Look, I
was not proctored. I just want to, not that my play would to give anyone any suspicions, but
take some insult in that.
Yeah, yeah. I
you should
I
take a little bit of insult for
I
not being proctored.
Expect me, but I knew before the event that some matches were proctored. And from Hans, it's like pretty, I mean, he said it, but it's also pretty clear that he's talking to someone. It's obviously a proctor.
Yes, yes. He was
like in between games talking to someone.
He was
so.
Occasionally talking to somebody. Cool. All right. We'll discuss that and more in next episode. But for now, Fabi, I'll see you in a couple of days in St. Louis. And yeah, we'll chat more then.
All right. See you.
See you guys. Cheers. Bye-bye.